The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You've reached the 7 o'clock hour here on the last show of the week. It's the second day of the month, and that means for 2023 that we are days away from finding out who the new mayor of the Queen City of Colorado, that's Denver for you and me, is going to be. It came down to two. We had Kelly Bruff on yesterday. Joining us on the VIP line right now is the other candidate running to become the mayor. His name is Michael Johnson. I've known him for a long time. Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, George. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm going to ask you a lot of the same questions I asked Kelly yesterday. Some will be more specific to some of the things going on. But, you know, you're days away here from this thing. And I know you've been sprinting now since you got into the race. But what do you do in the final hours of this campaign?
Great question. I think the news feed you had over the break about the spelling bee winner saying you just got to keep your nerves calm under high pressure, I thought that was meant for me.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I mean, I think we stay focused down the stretch on just getting to talk to as many voters as possible. So we're knocking as many doors as we can. We're making as many phone calls as we can. We're showing up in people's neighborhoods at their coffee shops and bars and restaurants and art festivals and just walking around and talking to as many people as we can, which is part of the fun.
Now, listen, there's a big ballot chase going on here. What's your perception of turnout so far, and how many ballots do you think are legitimately gettable between now and Tuesday evening?
Yeah, I mean, the most recent numbers we've seen are more than 80,000 ballots already in. That's many more than there were in the first round, and actually more than there were this time in the mayor's race 4 years ago in 2019. So we've seen good turnout, I think. I think there are still 100,000 ballots out there left to come in, and so we got a lot to chase. But I think we're going to see a better turnout than we might have in the first round and maybe in last election.
When you look at this final pitch to voters, and these are now the folks that have had their ballots now for a couple of weeks, they're hanging on to them. If you had to describe what daylight exists between you and Kelly on the major issues that confront Denver, what are you telling people?
You know, I think a big one is just the way that we have approached leadership and the way we would, which is, I've spent my career as a teacher and a school principal, as a state senator, as an entrepreneur, you know, as a CEO leading a foundation. And I've had the chance in all those roles to say, all right, what's the really big problem that the city or the state is facing? Mm-hmm. How do we build really broad bipartisan coalitions around that problem? And then how do you stay at it with real tenacity until you can deliver historic results? And I think that's what the city needs. You know, I was able to do that on things like working collaboratively on universal preschool statewide, or on taking on affordable housing and homelessness without increasing taxes. Like, those are efforts that required major bipartisan coalitions, and we got them done. And I think if we're going to have a mayor that can take on homelessness and affordable housing and public safety here, you need to build those kind of coalitions, and I think I've done that over time.
This is that point of the campaign where the sharp elbows come out, some from the candidates, but just given the nature of our political and campaign structure, a lot of them come from, you know, haymakers thrown from third parties out there outside the ring. Yeah. You talked about the leadership game and the things that you've done. One of the ads that was that has been run against you calls into question your leadership role on a couple things. One was the COVID response, and one was the gun restriction legislation over the time that you were in the legislature. Talk about those things.
Yeah, and I think all the news organizations that have reviewed that ad found it to be decidedly false. I think one of the reviewers who in the news says the most botched ad they've seen in 20 years.
Sean Boyd from Channel 4 said that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think for me, all the folks that were in those efforts with me will be the first to tell you. You can talk to superintendents around the city. I was talking to a teacher last night who said, I have the email right here where you sent us access to testing in the summer when no one else was providing it. And so, you know, we're very proud of that effort. I've always said, you know, I think their perception is that leadership is somehow a zero-sum game, that if one person leads, no one else can lead. And that's never the way any big things get done. It takes everybody to lead. When it was COVID check and we were trying to get access for teachers to get testing so we could reopen schools, you know, we were partnering with the city, we were partnering with the state, we were partnering with private laboratories, we were partnering with public health organizations, we were partnering with school superintendents. That's what it took to bring together all those partners and make sure we could reopen schools and deliver, in the end, about 10,000 tests a day for folks that wanted it. And so very proud of that record. Every one of the thousand people that that were in that partnership with us would say the same thing. And I think, you know, on gun safety, they're probably, I know as well from some of the folks who disagreed with where I was on that, that they're quite clear that they were upset with my leadership involved there, and the folks that supported it know, you know, the John Morses and the Morgan Carrolls and the Rhonda Fieldses and Tom Sullivan's folks I worked alongside. They've been very clear and I think outspoken in saying, listen, the broad coalition of leaders, Mike was a key part of it, and we're proud of that. So,
yeah, I think that was an unforced error, I think, on the third party's part, because when you get, and I know all the names that you mentioned, but the two that stuck out in my mind were Tom Sullivan and Rhonda Fields. When they come out and, without endorsing you, come out and say, whatever you're saying about Johnston and the gun stuff is just flat baloney. That's kind of a big deal when you get, because those two people have been leaders on that topic in the legislature for a long time as well. And I think they're recognized for that. So I thought that was probably a mistake for them to come at you that way. But again, there are ads that get run here other than the reference to those two things. What do you, and I asked Kelly the same thing, what do you think's the most unfair attack against you that has been that's been leveled by either Kelly or a third party supporting her?
Oh, I think those are. I think that's their only attempt to try to come after us, is to say that, you know, because I've had the chance to lead on a lot of significant things that made an impact. And so rather than trying to recognize those things or point out something else, they try to diminish the things that they know I have done. And then again, when there was a part of that, came to our aid and said, no, that's just decidedly false. So I think those were the most bizarre to me, because they were the most patently false. And I think everyone that was there came out and said that. And I think that's why you found their, you know, they took it off the air in about 4 days, because there was no, I think, thoughtful citizen in Denver who wanted to be one to pay for an ad that it was false.
Have any of the ads that either you have run or that third party supporting you that you have run, have any of those been subject to Kelly saying, or her campaign saying, you need to take these down because they're unfair? And I asked that because you guys asked their campaign to take this, or encourage, I guess, these ads to go away. Has she asked you to take any ads down or to address any ads that she thought were unfair?
No, that's never happened to us, because we never make claims that are false. And, you know, and I think that I'm very proud of the fact that I committed to running a clean campaign. I've run a clean campaign all the way through. All the campaigns I've run have been. I think Kelly parted from that commitment. She made it early and then decided to start going negative herself in her own ads, as well as her third party's ads and in her own communications. And, you know, that's everybody's choice. But I feel like one of the key questions here is, do you make commitments and do you stick to them? If you want a mayor who's going to stick to their word, you ought to test how they do that in the campaign as well.
One of the things that's come up now at this stage of the campaign is the bucks, the money, where it's coming from and where it's going. And I've read at least two articles that detail support that you've had from guys like Michael Bloomberg, who's not local, Kent Theory, who is local, and all, I mean, these guys that have thrown some big, big bucks at you. Is that an issue? Should it be an issue? Is it something that voters should want to know more about? Or is it, hey, this is just how the game is played?
I don't think it's really an issue. I mean, we're very proud of the fact in our campaign, you know, we have donations from more than 3,000 Denver residents. We have the smallest average donation. We have the most donations across the campaigns. And so those are all signs of real grassroots support. And I think what I hear most from voters when they ask about outside support is, you know, what is their interest in the city? What are they after? And so I think for us, we have a very different coalition, which is, you know, mostly people who've worked with me on big projects before, right? Obviously, Bloomberg was a supporter of the gun safe work that we did. We've worked with others on things like the universal school or the immigration reform that was bipartisan, or even the work on housing. And so they've seen me build big coalitions that they're interested in. I think it's a very different profile. And for Kelly supporters, those are 70 to 90% of those are all real estate or developers who have before the city are directly going to be bringing issues before the mayor. I think that's people's bigger concern, is do you have people who are trying to buy access or influence on issues that are going to be and my donors don't have that conflict.
Mike, it is just at the end there, it got a little bit harder to hear you. And I don't know if that's because you're standing in a well waiting for Lassie to save you, or if it's just that you got to stick your hand out the window. But with the regard to that, there are folks, and I've had them texting to here, say, oh, my God, dude's taking money from Bloomberg. No one would give that kind of money without an expectation of something on the back end. Discuss that.
Yeah, and for me, that's real clear. There's been no expectation. There's been no ask. There's been no commitment to any donor I've ever had support me. As I never change my approach or my policy based on who supports me. They've seen the leadership I've exhibited, and if they believe in that leadership, they support me. You know, Michael Bloomberg was a very, very successful mayor who cleaned up a city and turned it around, and who has led on some important issues. I think he believes mayors can be really important leaders in the country, and I think he's, I imagine, sees me as a potential to have that kind of leadership here in Denver. And so I think that's someone who knows what it takes to turn a city around. Betting on someone who thinks can, for me, is a reason to be proud of what Denver can do.
The endorsement thing is part of this game as well. I've had people ask me, why do the endorsements even matter? I think in a primary, they matter because they give you a certain amount of credibility. As we come up here towards the end, each of you has gotten some significant endorsements. I know when I had Kelly on yesterday, she talked about the former mayors, whether it was Webb or whoever else, Governor Ritter or some other folks. If there are, I know all the endorsements are important. I'm not asking you to rank order them or to diminish any others. But if there are some that you think would resonate with more folks as they make this final decision, which direction to go for mayor, what would you highlight as the endorsements that fit that bill?
Yeah, I think we're really proud of the diversity of those endorsements. Obviously, we got the Denver Post endorsement, which was the, you know, the major paper here, and they only did one candidate even out of the 17 of us. So I think that was significant. We got Federico Pena early on as endorser. You know, we have more than 50 elected officials and community leaders across the region who have worked with us from both parties, and so too long of a list for us to be able to go through. We have everything from groups like the Colorado Black Women for Political Action all the way over you know, six or seven of the candidates who ran with us, who were many of the top vote getters who have come in and endorsed us. And so I think we feel like we've built a really, you know, from faith organizations like, you know, Faith in Colorado, which is a set of faith and religious organizations around the city committed to social justice here. And so I think we've brought together faith, we've brought together elected leaders, we've brought together major newspaper endorsements, business leaders. I think we have a real broad coalition. I think that's what it takes to govern the city, and I think that's what it takes to help win a campaign.
We've gotten texts both with the interview yesterday and your interview today that have asked the question, are you going to fix the 16th Street Mall? How are you going to do it?
100%. Yeah, I mean, I've been officing down there the last 3 years for the organization I was running, and we know how tough of a spot that is, and you can't get your downtown back if you have the spine of your city torn up. And so we are going to move fast to make sure that project gets done on time and on budget, if not ahead of time. I've said I'd even double up on our staffing there to make that move faster. And then we want to really incentivize businesses to come back to 16th Street Mall. We want to incentivize people to come back. We know that means making it feel safer. That means more public safety and deploying more officers down there. It also means helping make it easier for people to come back to work in person, you know, being able to provide eco passes for employees who work downtown to take light rail or bus downtown for free, being able to get more things like childcare downtown, which is harder to get access to, but really encouraging those businesses who are there to stay, encouraging those who have left to come back, and encouraging those who might have not be thinking of taking their family for dinner down to the 16th Street Mall to convince them that they can really come back to a part of the city they love. I was down there for the Nuggets game last night, and the city felt fantastically.
Did you go to the Nuggets game last night?
Oh no, I was just standing out on the watching on the street with everybody else.
Yeah, that's right. Had you gone to the game, you'd have lost votes, man, because people would be like, if the minimum ticket is $600, what's this? I mean, that would have been an elite move. I'm glad you didn't make it in there, and I'd be jealous as hell if you had, because I wanted to go in there.
I couldn't even get into McGregor Square. I was standing behind the fence with everybody else, watching over the fence into the McGregor Square camera, which is pretty, and TV screen, which is pretty awesome.
When you look at one of the things that's plaguing that area that you described, including the 16th Street Mall, it's not just the ongoing construction and attempts to renovate and rejuvenate and all that other stuff. It is the crime and the homelessness issue. I know folks that are like, I don't feel comfortable going down there after a certain hour. And that is a combination of those two things. Talk about the crime thing first. Like, is there a day one Mayor Johnston move to address public safety in Denver?
There is. And yeah, I've shared that experience when I was, you know, I had staff that worked for our organization. We had our offices at Union Station, and I had staff who, you know, were afraid to walk the block or two blocks to the parking lot each night after work. And that's not a downtown you can attract people to stay in. And so I think we do have work to do there. For me, day one is, yes, we got to restore our core of officers and our first responders. That means both more officers, but also more mental health and responders. As you probably know, when we talk to officers in District 6 downtown, about 75% of their calls often are to encampments. So you have officers who are being pulled away from what are real needs around public safety, the locations they can't necessarily make the biggest impact or are the best help. And so when you increase the number of mental health workers or EMTs or paramedics, they can be the ones to respond to those folks in mental health crisis. And then you preserve the officers to be able to be in places if you need them. The other one, George, I'm a big fan of, is when I talk to officers who've been at this 20 or 30 years, they'll say when this worked the best was when we had enough staff and the commitment to do real community-based policing. We had guys actually out walking, talking to neighbors, giving out business cards, highly visible. I think particularly in downtown, you want to have an officer corps that is visible, that's present, that's on foot, that's preventing crimes before they happen, and is letting someone know if they want to go for a jog at 9 o'clock at night, you can do that, because you should expect to see public safety officers around.
And you were just breaking up a little on the end there, but you talked about the community policing thing. Recently, some members of the Denver School Board, specifically Tay Anderson, have said, I'm not asking for SROs back in schools. I'm asking for CROs to go back in schools. Even though you as the mayor, you don't have control over the Denver Public Schools. They're all elected officials. The school board, they take care of that stuff. They have a superintendent. But when you look at that, where are you on the idea of SROs in schools and school safety?
Yeah, you know, I came out early after, unfortunately, the first shooting at East High School this year and said I thought that schools should be able to make that decision. And when parents and teachers and students and administrators are saying, we want school resource officers back, I think they should absolutely be able to do that. And I said, if the school board wasn't willing to do that, I would deploy those folks directly from Denver Police Department. And when you talk to people who went to our high schools, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they'll say, you know, many of these officers went to these high schools themselves. When we took the school resource officers out of those high schools, I think 10 of the 11 of those SROs were graduates of that very high school. I'd talk to guys who'd say, you know, I was the guy I talked to when I was having trouble at home, or I was having trouble with my dad or with a girlfriend. Like, they were not just safety officers, they were mentors. And I think if you get the right people that really want to do those jobs, they can add a huge amount of value. We also talk to business leaders around Colfax, around East High School, who will say they not just help keep the school safe, they help, you know, after school when 3,000 kids are let out and they all come to the neighborhood. Sometimes you need an extra pair of eyes to make sure kids aren't doing stuff that 18-year-old kids do. And so I think that's helpful balance for both the school community itself and for the neighborhoods that serve those schools.
We're talking with Mike Johnston, candidate for mayor. We'll know on Tuesday. I hope it's Tuesday, by the way. I mean, my hope is this doesn't come down to, you know, hand recounts and all that other stuff. My hope is we have a winner, and I'm not looking for a blowout, but I hope we have a winner that we can know about before we go to bed. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you about in terms of the homelessness thing is you have a plan. It's different than Kelly's. You guys aren't like an eclipse in overlapping your plans on how to address homelessness. Describe the difference between what Kelly wants to do, but your idea with the small homes or the tiny homes. I don't know what the right word is. Are they homes challenged in size? I don't know what the right term is, but it's something like that.
They are tiny homes. And here's the reason why we know this works. And I think that, you know, I've worked on this for the last few years. And so we've partner with organizations who we know have proven this works. This is not an idea. It's actually a real proven data point, which is you got to do a couple things at once. One is you got to get people access to housing, but that has to be housing you can build quickly and you can build affordably, right? You can't do what San Francisco is doing, which is saying, let's build everybody a single family home. And it takes 3 years and $700,000 a unit to do that.
Wow.
The reason why you do these tiny homes is you take an acre lot around the city. You can put 40 or 50 of these tiny homes on them. You can, you know, they cost about $20,000-$25,000 a piece. If you want to see something really inspiring, you can go to Cherry Creek High School and see where they have students in their carpentry class that are actually building these every year as their final project and then delivering them to families who are going to live in them for the first time. You've never seen a 17-year-olds feel so good about themselves is when they realize they just housed someone who didn't have a house. But they can be built very quickly and affordably. Put them on site. They got heating, they got air conditioning, they got a bed, they got, you know, access to kitchens and showers and bathrooms. They have staff that's there regularly, mental health support, addiction treatment, workforce training. So now you have all the services right there on site that people need to get their lives back together and get back to work. And we know this works overwhelmingly and is actually far more effective and far less costly than what we're doing currently, and gets people back on their feet and gets them back to work. And some of these sites that Colorado Coalition for the Homeless have led with a converted hotel in that example, you know, they've brought people in and had 86% of those people still be housed a year later. They've moved on to permanent housing. They're back on their feet. They're getting jobs. And so the good news is we know there really is a path.
Where's the money come from for that? Where do you pay for that from?
Yeah, and this is really important, too. I mean, one of the things you'll notice is every single policy proposal I've put out in this campaign has a detailed plan for how we do it and has on my website a complete budget for exactly how much it costs, what it's paid for with, and where those dollars come from. And all of this is done without increasing tax. I think the taxpayers have been generous in Denver. We got to use their dollars more efficiently. And so the money to build those units is a one-time cost that still comes from federal funds the state has. And then the ongoing support for the staffing on these sites that are really important. That comes from Proposition 123, which was that bipartisan ballot measure we passed last year that put dollars into affordable housing and homelessness without increasing taxes as well. And so I think we already know these are paid for. That's why I spent the last few years working on that Proposition 123 effort, as we knew there was a need for resources. We knew there was resources in the system. We just had to focus them towards these challenges, and now those are available. All we need is the leadership to take this vision and scale it, and then the tenacity to stay at it when it gets hard.
Here's a text from a listener. What is Mike going to do to meet the needs and wants of Christian pro-liberty constituents?
Thanks for the question. I'm a Christian myself. I was raised in a very Catholic family. In fact, some of my first memories of Denver were my dad bringing me down to pitch in here at Catholic Charities to work on some of these same problems. So faith has been an important part of my life, and I think the faith community will be an important part of the coalition we'll need to govern. You know, and I have a family with diverse political points of view on this one, including folks that I think would fit the category of what the listener described, and I felt it's always been helpful for me that I sit at that dinner table with family every night that has diverse views on this, and I respect them all and I hear them all. And I did that when I was in the legislature. A lot of folks, friends of yours, George, you know, I got to work together and stuff a lot with folks like Greg Brophy and Josh Penry and others who I think were really thoughtful conservative leaders, and we found common ground on it. And so that's exactly what I love about this job, is it's a nonpartisan job. You don't play for one team. You play for every single resident of the city, and that's what I would do.
How in the world, this is a wrap-up question here, how in the world are you going to do this, because you also have a super successful, super busy wife and a bunch of kids running around? How in the world does the mayor pull this off when your wife's out there fighting crime every day?
I mean, we've definitely talked about that a handful of times. The benefit of this is, you know, it's all within mostly 10 miles of your house, so you have crazy long, full days, but you can make it home time to see a kid's football game or make it to dinner with your family and just prioritize that. I think I do also have the benefit, if we're successful, of a team of 11,000 people, you know, and a budget that we can use to do good. One of the things I will say that I thought was compelling about the second President Bush when he was in was he said, you know, I believe it's possible to both run the country and make time to be with your family as well. You can do both. And so I think we'll find that balance for us, which is both how can I show up to be a dad and be a good husband, which are my first jobs, and do this job as absolute best of my ability.
Any thoughts, last question too, any thoughts on what you want to do with the police department?
I'm excited to help make sure we can rebuild the force. We can both add back more officers. We can help build morale. I think when I talked to officers, a lot of them did a ride along a couple weeks ago. I think they want to know that they have a mayor that supports them and sees this as a dignified and noble and important profession, and I do. And we got to inspire a whole lot of other people to want to join this profession and to realize this is a job you'll be thanked for doing and you'll be appreciated for doing. I have been very optimistic that when I go to neighborhoods all around Denver, even some of the most progressive neighborhoods in the city, people will say, hey, why do I not see more officers in my neighborhood? I never see officers now. And I think there is a point in the city where people really want that. My son was out here in North Denver 2 nights ago, and they had a couple friends who got carjacked at gunpoint in the middle of Central, you know. And so everyone feels it around the neighborhoods. And so they know they really want those officers to be there protecting them. And I think that they're going to be pleased that this is a community that really, I think, is ready to embrace them and make sure that they're going to be good community partners. And I think there's a way to do both.
I beg you, if you could do anything, it's to fix the parking in Denver, make it easier for people that don't live in Denver to park there and then come back out and their car still be there. Those are two related issues. I'm not asking you to answer how you're going to do it, but pretty please, if you pull this thing off, please make it easier for folks to park in Denver, because it is, I imagine there's a lot of people out there driving around now, like, that is the thing. Once you're in Denver, it's fantastic, right? But parking in Denver, you're like, this makes me sick. It's crazy time.
Exactly. I think the expectation that your car is still there should be a reasonable one too.
Billy just threw out the idea, and again, I don't want a commitment here. I'm not throwing Bloomberg money at you or anything like that, so I'm not expecting something, but how about radio host parking spaces or a special permit? Is there such a thing? Is there a way to do that by decree? Do you have an executive order potential?
I haven't seen that proposal come across my policy desk yet. I'm not sure that it's, I think it might be unconstitutional.
Please post it on the website. Michael Johnston, he wants to be the mayor of Denver. It's down to he and Kelly Bruff. We've had them both on. What's the best way for people to learn a little bit more about you as they make this decision?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, George. I think you were the first show I ever did.
Today. Bam!
You had me in, and so great to be here down the stretch. But yes, bookends. My website is Mike Johnston for Mayor, FOR Mayor. I had to spell it out because I'm an old English teacher, so I can't do the number four. But yeah, MikeJohnston4Mayor.com. Come check it out. You can see all our proposals, all the budgets, how they're paid for, what we hope to do. And if you want to come knock some doors or make some phone calls these last 4 days, we'd love your help.
And for folks typing that in there, Johnston has a T in it. It's not just like Johnson Corners or something up there in North Colorado. There's a T in there, so check that out. Mike, thanks for this. I hope we get a chance to talk to you after Tuesday either way.
Look forward to it, man. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, sir. Take care. Hey, that's Mike Johnston, maybe the next mayor of Denver. I should have asked Kelly, too, to commit to a radio host placard or some, and producer. I mean, I'm not going to leave Billy out there. A producer placard that allows you to basically abandon your car really anywhere in Denver. As long as it's not blocking more than one lane of traffic, you just abandon it. And then if it's
stolen, then we are allowed to choose another car in the parking lot.
I like that, too.
It's an option. Yeah.
I do that a lot when I go to a place with a valet. I'll come back out and say, bring me something special.
Yeah, you know, surprise,
I
mean?
Like, yeah, surprise me. Yeah, surprise. You can't do worse than what I dropped off.
Exactly.
So just bring me something and let's make each other happy.
I might have had an experience the last couple of months where I go into the parking lot after coming out of the store, and I'm standing in front of the car, and like, I think the remote broke. Do that. And I start looking in, and I try the safety key to get in there, and it's not working. What is wrong with, oh, I didn't park here. I'm over there. May have done that a couple
good
of
Lord.
Times.
Nice one, Biden. Not that you fell down in the parking lot. Hey, listen, when we come back, I'd love to hear any thoughts that you have. What did you hear there? And now we've heard both candidates twice. We had Kelly and Mike on earlier in the campaign before the initial primary piece. Now we're at the general, folks. It is it's ballot dropping off time. We're days away. Of course, we'll cover the outcome of that race, and we'll try to get them both back on afterwards. But tell me your thoughts. Out of those two, what resonated with you, and what concerns do you still have? I imagine that, and I've had some texts like this, some conservatives who are like, neither one of these people are super conservative. No, they're not. They're not conservatives. But that's not the issue. You have two choices, right? Actually, gets one choice, two candidates. How are you going to go with this? 303-696-1971. What didn't you hear? What do you need to hear? What other information do you have to have before you commit to voting that ballot sitting on your counter? It's George Brockler on the George Show, 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Mike Johnston. He is a candidate for mayor. We're going to know on Tuesday whether he or Kelly are going to be the new mayors of the Queen City. That's Denver. It's a big deal, as you know. First off, we're here in Denver, but nothing happens in Denver that doesn't filter into the surrounding metro area. It's like, man, if Denver makes a policy decision, everybody else feels it, good or bad. So, you know, this is a big, big decision about how you're going to cast your vote if you can. Got some texts that have come in here. Mike will do better with judicial appointments. Kelly's former boss, Hickenlooper, was horrible in that area. Mike's wife, I don't think she's a former deputy DA. Someone said former. I think she's a current deputy DA in Denver. Will provide some good influence there. I hope so. both seem very flippant with taxpayer money, more concerned with brand marketing than creating sound policy geared towards taxpaying Coloradans. We live in a very socially vain culture, so not much of a surprise. Both won't do much better than Hancock. I don't know. I mean, certainly in the last term, Mayor Hancock's been a bit of a lame duck, so I think they will. As a conservative, why vote? Both of these candidates will only make the situation worse. What we need is a conservative movement to write in a candidate. Well, remember, there was a conservative candidate, Andy Rougeau, who we also had on the radio. And Andy spent real money to try to get that thing. I don't think he could muster better than fourth behind Lisa Calderon. So there were conservative candidates, but folks, Denver ain't conservative. I mean, I think the split Dem to Republicans got to be like 80-20, something like that. But we've got, here's what George has done. George has screwed up the call thing, so I can't see the names Billy has typed in. Online one, forgive me, tell me your name, sir.
This is Brian.
Brian, I am so sorry, man. I have jacked up our screen here, so I don't get to see who's calling in. I'll have to fix that during a break, but tell us what you're thinking.
Hey, you know, I don't live in Denver, and, you know, I stopped going to Denver for 3-4 years ago when I was, you know, aggressively harassed by a homeless person in front of my kids because I wouldn't give him a dollar. And this is 16th Street Mall and no police around. And I was like, you know what? Denver. So I've been done with Denver, and it's just gotten progressively worse as we've all seen.
No pun intended.
So I don't go there. I don't go there. But this guy, Mike, hey, sounds good to me. And Kelly is just same part of the machine. She sounded like she's good stuff, but she's same part of the Hickenlooper machine. Hickenlooper caused this problem with the road home or the way home or whatever that crap was that let homeless people be wherever they wanted to be. So I wouldn't trust her as far as I could throw her. But Mike is talking about, you know, it's so sad that it's gotten so bad under Hickenlooper and Polis and Hancock. What a nightmare that, you know, a conservative actually has a chance to win in Denver because it's so bad. People are so sick of it. He's talking religion.
You think they do? You think a conservative does have a chance?
I honestly think he's going to win just because the machine in Denver is just unstoppable. The progressive machine is unstoppable. Hickenlooper's hands will be all over this election. So I don't think he has a chance. But the fact that he's in the running and people are listening tells me that it has to get so bad that a conservative might win in Denver. That's the saddest part of this whole thing is Denver has to go to ruins before people wake up and say, hey, maybe somebody with common sense could run this city.
I want to believe you that could happen. I don't think that's true. I think that Denver is getting exactly what they want with city council and the school board. I mean, they've had many, many opportunities to right the ship, and they've just doubled down. I mean, this is like a hold my beer moment for Denver. But when you talk about Kelly, let me ask, were there policies that she talked about that you thought, I just don't like that as much as the other guy? Or is it purely the association having been the chief of staff for Mayor Hickenlooper?
Purely the association. They're both using kind of the same verbiage. He added faith in there, which I'm sure she'll never talk about because that just ticks the progressives off. He's talking about, you know, so their policies were kind of identical. They're going to address the homeless problem. They both like police officers now all of a sudden. Denver likes police officers. Imagine that. They're not talking to fund the police like the candidates were 3 years ago, you know. So, they're both talking the same talk, but I think Mike would walk it. I don't think Kelly would. As soon as she got in there, she's Hickenlooper, progressive. She's Tay-Tay Anderson fan. She's just going to go along with whatever happens. Who knows?
Oh, but that would be a big deal to me. I mean, if Tay Anderson came out and endorsed a candidate, I'd be like, hard pass.
Well, nobody is going to go. The problem is nobody's speaking against Tay Anderson. They let him do and say whatever he wants. And I don't have you'll never see one candidate say that he's wrong, even though this guy's been chastised. He's been under investigation for illegal activities with minors. It doesn't matter. The machine will not talk negatively against Anderson. Kyle Clark won't even talk negatively about the guy. So until we can get somebody to stand up to the school board and the city council, then Denver's never going to change, whether it's the schools and SROs.
But the DA's
a nightmare.
The mayor doesn't have any authority over that. They just have that bully pulpit and the ability to try to influence. I would say this. If you suggested that Mike or Kelly, either one, were conservative, I think both of them would disavow that title. I don't think they would adopt progressive. I think they would both couch themselves in terms of moderate. But I definitely think they lean left. I mean, whether you think they're in the center or not, they definitely lean left.
Yeah, I don't think they're conservatives by any stretch, but I think they're talking like conservatives. And that's the sliver of hope that Denver has to get so bad. I mean, we're not San Francisco yet. No. We're not Portland yet, where they're defecating and urinating all over the place in public. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. And now we're having people talk like conservatives. Oh, we like the police. Oh, we want, you know, homeless to solve the homeless problem. It tells me people are waking up. I just don't know if they've woken up enough yet.
Brian, thank you so much for the phone call, man. Have a great weekend. We're going to cut away for a break, and we're going to come back to Brian. But a different Brian, not Brian from Arvada. Brian from Alpine. Stick around. George Brockler, 710 KNUS. It's that time of the show. We got to get made a lot smarter about all the important stuff going on. I know he's super busy, so he can't give us as much time as we'd like to pepper him about all things North Carolina. It's our friend Brian Gray from Alpine Planning.
Hey, George, what's going on this morning?
Hey, sir.
How about those Nuggets?
Oh, buddy, come on. I mean, that's just all world stuff. If we can keep this thing going, I don't want to jinx it. If we can keep this thing going, come on. How great for
three
the city.
Three more games.
Three more, baby.
Hey, let's take a look at these markets. We got the Dow's up over 400 points, 406. S&P's up 34, and the NASDAQ's up 68. A lot of this is due to, obviously, the job or the debt ceiling getting passed. But we also added 339,000 jobs.
Wow.
So that really is pushing the market forward. But you know, George, one of the things is I sit back and the three of us will talk about this today in the office. We got all this done in 48 hours. And for the past 2 months, all we've been seeing is a seesaw market because they couldn't get it done. And, you know, the stress, the worrisome that it's put on the economy. And now we get it done in 48 hours. And look what it's doing to the stock market. I think that's one of the things that just absolutely drives me crazy is you're going to get it done. There's going to be some give and takes on both sides. And when it does get done, you see this green that we're looking at right now. So, you know, we've been telling our clients for the past couple of months, hang in there. You got a good balanced portfolio right now going forward. It's going to be choppy probably for the next 6 months. We had a good feeling, you know, we couldn't say 100%, but we had a good feeling that there was going to be a compromise with the debt ceiling. And sure enough, here we go. And I think that's one of the biggest things. We always tell people, you know, control what you can control. You can't control what happens in Washington, but you can control what's going on with your portfolio. So, you know, here we are coming up almost to the midway point of the year. Now's the time to sit down with your advisors again, make sure that everything's in line, make sure that, you know, you're able to capitalize on some of these gains as we move forward. Because, you know, we could be looking at greener pastures moving ahead.
Real quickly here, I know the Fed, they kind of indicate they might go this way or that. I just recently read something that they think the Fed may not actually do anything with rates this time around.
Yeah, they're talking about, you know, everybody was talking about a quarter point, and now they're talking about not even raising it a quarter point, just keeping everything stagnant going forward. And if that's the case, we're just going to see this. We're just going to continue to see this market move forward. So, once again, you know, my favorite line, control what you can control. You can't control what's going on in Washington, but you can definitely control what's going on in your investments. And, that's one of the biggest things that we're doing right now is
awesome.
portfolio reviews. We got people coming in for second Great. Opinion. So if you want a second opinion, give the office a call.
Do it.
We'd love to sit down with you.
Let's tell them how to do it. Alpine Planning Group is a comprehensive financial planning firm committed to improving your long-term financial success. Long-term. Investing is a matter of trust. They're prepared to earn yours. Call Brian, Amy, and Gabe today at 303-843-0918, 303-843-0918. Brian, thank you, and have a great weekend. Go Nugs.
Hey, you too, George. See ya.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
Chief Pazin next. George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.